Hi, I'm Nicola Graham, and welcome to Chewing Over High Performance. In this episode, we'll be exploring the question, is data key to MSK performance, with Rhys Carter, one of the co-founders of Carter & George Physiotherapy Practice. But first, thanks to our sponsor, Nucle. Nucle is a comprehensive practice management system for allied health practices and clinics, ranging from small to large, as well as multi-location. Nucle is designed to deliver both clinical and management perspectives, so practitioners, practice managers, and business owners can achieve their desired outcomes. Nucle understands the importance of performance and therefore looks to deliver these results for you. Nucle would like to offer the first 100 listeners an exclusive 25% discount on their data conversion migration for 2024. Just visit nucle.com/promotions/MSK24 to start a free trial with the coupon code MSK24 and you'll receive 25% off your first data conversion and migration. Thank you, Nucle, for your support for the MSK industry. In this episode, I'm joined by Rhys Carter, one of the co-founders of Carter & George Practice, whose business partner is Jamie George, the current England rugby team captain. Post-graduation, Rhys's clinical career took him straight into private practice, before then a spell working in Dubai. He then returned to the UK to commence his journey as a business owner, and Rhys is currently undertaking the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business course for high-growth SME companies. Led by Rhys, Carter & George has grown organically by opening new sites as well as through acquisitions, with his latest one just completing last week. This is taking Carter & George to 5 practices and with the 6th one now in the pipeline. Rhys and I were introduced in November 22 and I was super impressed by his commercial approach, and over this time we have quite a few conversations and we quite often come back to the conversation and the topic of data. And so, Rhys, is data the key to MSK performance management?
Thank you, Nicola. In a nutshell, I think in MSK, there's a lot of access to data now through various outcome measures tools you can use, but also a lot of the most recent practice management softwares, they give you heaps of data points. And I think, like we say, when you're treating patients, if you are not testing, then you're guessing. I'd say that's the same in terms of running your business as well. I think there's plenty of data metrics out there now that you can use to help analyze and inform decisions. And that's how we try to do it at Carter & George.
So your background actually was from kind of sport yourself. I think you play quite high level sport. Obviously your co-founder and business partner is from an elite sporting background. That's got to feed into kind of some of the, I suppose, the philosophy or the approaches that you have with Carter & George, taking that more, I suppose, kind of high performance and data-driven approach. What is it like having the England rugby team captain as your current business partner?
Well, his intro would have been a lot more interesting than mine, so you should have done Jamie's.
He can come on the next one.
With accolades. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. Jamie and I have been good mates for more than 20 years. So it's a pretty strong friendship, first and foremost. But as a business partnership, it's great. There's some unique challenges, but also some great synergies there as well. I mean, firstly, some of the downsides to working with someone like Jamie is that for large chunks of the year, such as now we're sitting here in March, he's got Six Nations camp on at the moment, so he's pretty inaccessible over a kind of 10-week period, which is I'm kind of got used to now, but that poses challenges when, particularly at the stage that we're at with our business, you know, got a couple of acquisitions done in the last couple of months, and even just logistically needing things to be signed and people to view things and all the challenges that come with that. But from the plus side, firstly, from the day-to-day, having someone that is not day-to-day involved breathing over your shoulder, it does allow you to be a bit more free with some of the decision making, and there's good trust between us, which helps. Also just the underpinning philosophy of what we do at Carter & George was all stemmed from elite sport. You know, what Jamie gets access to and other elite athletes get access to is very data informed, very science backed, with no commercial gain to be made really, other than keeping those athletes on the park. And fundamentally, that's where it all started for us, was to see how we could replicate that over to the general public. And that in itself comes with lots of data points and things to analyze, which we've taken on. And I think To be honest, like if I had to blow our own trumpet, I think 5, 6 years after we started, which we're at now, I'd say we're closer to doing that than we were at the start, which as we've got bigger, has posed challenges, but I think actually we're doing a better job of it now than 5, 6 years ago.
Okay, let's unpack that a little bit then. So from what you're saying, just going back slightly from the from I suppose from your perspective really, having Jamie as that business partner, where do you get your support from if it's not from your co-founder and your business partner? How do you address that as a challenge just from a just a purely kind of a running and a strategy side of the business?
When it was smaller, it was a little bit easier just for me to do that. But as we've got bigger and having a bit more diversity of opinions from different backgrounds is important. And if Jamie's not around to do that, we've had to build out our own team. So we've got a senior leadership team that's a combination of kind of operations, finance, myself, from a clinical background, clinicians, and that was pretty important to us to make sure that we were able to actually have a multiple kind of faceted opinion on that. And I don't think we're fully there yet in terms of developing that team, but we're in a good position where we have mixtures of opinions and different ways of viewing things from different backgrounds. So that I think that's pretty essential in a business that's growing like this.
And we've alluded to the kind of your approach from a data clinical perspective, but then how do you manage that with the performance management side from an organizational and a leadership point of view? I assume kind of different KPIs for the clinical team compared to yourself within the leadership team and the performance of the organization, but there must be an underpinning kind of philosophy that data informs those decisions going forward.
I'd say like if you unpack that a bit, you've got and speaking kind of honestly on that, I think we've got pretty hard data-based KPIs, and I think we're pretty high volume practice now, so we've got good clinical data. So from that side, we know roughly based on conditions how many appointments, for example, it might take for that person on average to start feeling better, taking into account everyone's a bit different, but we've got a relatively decent range on how long it'll take per pathology. How many sessions that requires, generally from a commercial side, how much people spend on per condition, those sort of things. And then from a kind of a more business leadership side, we use pretty hard, maybe a bit harder data in terms of analyzing opportunities for us in terms of acquisition, or if we're looking to take on new members of staff or employ people, we know kind of within a pretty accurate range certain KPIs that inform decision making around that as well. So yeah, I think we use data across the whole point from delivery of care all the way through to running the business. It's pretty much all based on data, taking into account that people are people, and you're working with physios who are pretty people centric. So I'd say when it comes to managing the clinical team and how they manage patients, it isn't hard and fast data rules everything, but it does definitely inform certain decisions about offering good standard of care.
And I was always really, as I say, kind of impressed from when we first met of how much that featured within your approach. Where does that come from? Why? Why did you, why was it so about the data from and from even kind of the initiation of, I suppose, becoming a business owner? Is that something you had read, something someone had taught you, something someone had mentored you? Where did that approach come from? Because it's not, if we compare it to, say, I suppose, sports science as a background, which is much more, I'd say, data-led than what physiotherapy is. Even though we talk about kind of subjective and objective measures, when we then start to talk about it from kind of a, I'd say, a data analytics kind of point of view, it's quite different, I would say. There's different levels of data.
Yeah, I don't. The honest answer is I don't really know. I mean, I was lucky. I grew up in a family that was, entrepreneurial maybe. So I was exposed to that kind of growing up, but in a very different industry than healthcare. And so maybe there was a bit of that. But I think also just as I kind of went through, without sounding too kind of righteous about it, I think I started as early in my career in private practice thinking that things were done in a kind of strange way, and it could be done a lot better than it was. And I suppose then that informed me to set our business up myself because I just thought we could do things better as a physio primarily. Then as I started running a business and you start accessing different practice softwares and you start looking at some of the data that pulls from them, first and foremost it was intrigue. Like, why are these practice software tools throwing loads of data at me if it's not important. And then I started looking at why certain things interacted with certain other things. And I don't know, if I use one thing for us, for example, a client visit average, how many times does someone come in for a certain condition? And I was comparing that against other KPIs that we look at and seeing how they relate to each other. And as we got a bit bigger, that data pool got a bit bigger, and we were able to compare physio versus physio or practice versus practice and see that actually clinical correlations in terms of patient outcomes and satisfaction, and that's based on patient feedback through things like Net Promoter Scores, were actually directly correlated to KPIs on a harder, kind of more numerical basis, things like client visit average or forward booking average or transaction values. And so we started matching the two. And don't get me wrong, like it's not always just purely on data, but there is a level of we can be pretty confident that a physio is performing to a good level clinically based on a series of KPIs that interact with each other, and we know when we've got someone who knows what they're doing.
But as a kind of, I suppose I alluded to, that's not the kind of always I would say the common approach. And maybe that's because my background started in the NHS, and our data point was basically how long is our waiting list. As an individual, like in particularly, I was in quite a busy MSK outpatient clinic in London, and that each month we were given like a sheet of our, and it was like try to get this a little bit lower. And so that was probably the only aspect. So yes, we had, as I say, it just felt limited. And so as I suppose, I don't, it's just trying to understand from my perspective, is that in you around data, or actually the fact that you kind of go, if you went straight into private practice, you're not biased by different public health systems versus private health systems. So you went kind of, you're straight into that kind of commercial environment and what that looks like, and I suppose the differences within those health systems.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. Probably the second. I mean, I'm not from a background of statistics or maths or anything. If anything, I'm pretty poor at that generally. But I think, yeah, it probably did stem from the idea. But I will say I'm actually really happy this is changing. But I think that when I graduated, it was very rare for physios to go straight into private practice. It was, hope they're not listening to this, but I won't mention names, but my kind of tutors and course leads were very anti me going to private practice and kind of called me out on it a fair bit and told me I was making a fatal error. But it worked out for me, and it was the route I wanted to go. And I'm really glad, by the way, that physio is moving towards a bit more diversity and options when people graduate rather than the traditional roles. I'm not saying that you shouldn't go and do your rotations, but I do think there are other options out there. And so, yeah, I went for practice straight away. I suppose therefore you are accessing, I worked in a small practice at the start, and fundamentally the first KPI I ever learned was you've got to pay for yourself. And so that's where I
Out of
started.
interest, were you self-employed or were you
No,
employed?
I was employed.
You were employed,
Yeah,
okay.
and actually I'll preface a lot of this conversation with, in our business, everyone's employed. So
Okay.
there's no KPIs that are made on kind of poor clinical decision making. People get paid whether they see people or not. So yeah, we yeah I think that's where it started really. Probably I was accessing, I was in a private sector. I wasn't influenced by KPIs about discharging people and kind of trust policies and governance and stuff. Like really, I was just told to be a really good physio, got good mentorship, and then started figuring out that actually the better standard of care I was offering was directly correlated to better KPIs and better commercial performance as a business anyway. And so what I started realizing is that, and going off slightly on a tangent, but I think it is related and worth talking about. I think this idea that physios and healthcare in general should be following this biopsychosocial approach to healthcare, in my opinion, we can't be true in saying we're doing that if we're not addressing the psychosocial part of that by discharging people before they are better. And I get that there is a funding and governance issues in the NHS that make that tougher, but I do think that for us to offer a really good standard of care, sometimes that does require people to come in for 6 weeks, for example, for a pathology to work with physios to get better. And in my opinion, and by the way, the data stacks up for this, both in patient feedback and outcome measures, that delivering a good standard of care generally performs well commercially and the patient outcomes and patient experience.
And I think that's the thing though, isn't it? It's the ability to manage people individual. So some people, one session may be appropriate depending, well, for example, like for us in Oxford, people are, it's a we've got quite a high transitional population. So they're here and then they've gone. So it's not a steadfast aspect of it, but we also know, and I think this is where I think it's really interesting in MSK when we start to get the data, and it's all MSKPN as part of my kind of role, apart from being a business owner, being a director of MSKPN has this focus on data, is that the ability to meet people's expectations or explain those expectations when they come for a clinical condition. So you alluded to at the beginning that if someone is coming for a knee problem, you roughly know how many sessions they're going to need. Because we do get that as a question, like even at the initial consultation, how many sessions am I going to require? And yes, we can say everyone's different and people will respond differently depending on whether you adhere to your rehab program or what else is going on. But we need to be able to kind of caveat that with roughly we think it will be this, because you're managing them people's time expectations, their monetary expectations. There's so many kind of parts to it. And are you saying that that data you feel quite confident with now because of the volumes you've got, that it allows your clinicians to have those levels of communication and conversations with people?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we know very well, I'd say very, everyone's slightly different, but we know pretty accurately the investment required from that person and time and, I don't know, let's say session number on average to hit certain criteria for return to play or for I don't know, return to function or whatever their goal is. We've got enough data on that to know what we'd expect, and we're again to balance that with the more human side, where it's a soft KPI for us because people are different. Like I just mentioned a minute ago, the biopsychosocial approach, if we truly adopt that, would mean that there are people that it's not just a physical condition that is the reason they're in there. There might be other reasons that you need to kind of unpack, and so there are people that are on the high end of those kind of averages, there are people on the low end of those averages, but across a big data set, across a 6 to 12 month period, you can be pretty confident that the majority fit within a, you know, relatively kind of specific range of what that will look like in terms of getting that person to achieve their goals. So we're pretty confident on that, and we use that as a performance management tool as well. Like if you want to use, know, not just, I think with data you can collect as much data as you want, and these practice softwares are churning out like mad amounts of data now, but it's how you apply that data both clinically and commercially, and also just kind of actually manage your team as well. So for example, how we would use that type of data is that if we look through our stats and realize that a particular physio is way over treating certain conditions compared to other physios, we might need to go and speak to that person about, in our world where it's not self-employed, there's no monetary gain there, so actually is there an education issue around different treatment pathways, and do we actually need to go back and revisit that particular pathology? Or if it's that we are discharging people really early on in the process, do we actually, is there a skill gap there or a lack of knowledge gap that we need to address in terms of sending someone on a CPD course, or do we need to have some one-on-one trainings around, I don't know, for example, it might be a physio that sees tendons brilliantly, but as soon as the lower back comes in, they've got a really low client visit average. If that's the case, perhaps we need to spend some time teaching them around lower back pain and formulating some treatment plans there. So that's the real life use of that data.
And now that you are growing, you're obviously also coming across clinicians with varied backgrounds and experiences themselves as well, yeah, and their own biases, which we all have. And how do you start to kind of challenge that, I suppose, internally to relate it to your culture and your philosophy and the data that you can kind of support that with? When people haven't had data, hasn't been a part of their clinical journey to date, how do those conversations go?
It's a good question. Not always well. I think, you know, I'm a big believer that physios shoot themselves in the foot a lot of the time by not embracing modern technology and kind of progression in science. We kind of love to be confident that we know what we're doing. And actually, like, a lot of the conversations are around, you know, actually kind of trialing using data and realizing that actually, firstly, it's not that scary. Secondly, it makes it easier to make clinical decisions. And then thirdly, what you start finding is that patients are more engaged. Patients start fulfilling their full treatment plans rather than dropping off halfway through. patient expectation, sorry, patient experience scores start going up. And so usually those that embrace it find actually that it's a really good addition to their clinical skill set. Yeah, there are people that don't like using it, and I get like not everyone's maybe as kind of nerdy on that as we are, but I do think that those that do give it a chance, provided there's a structure around how to do that and how to record it, I think they're pretty happy with the results.
And you, from a clinical perspective, my understanding is that physiotherapy is, I don't know what percentage it is of your business, but strength and conditioning as a service, I think you call it strength and conditioning rather than personal training or clinical rehab, that features very highly in your. Do you see a correlation between the two? And obviously, you obviously see a synergy between them clinically as to why you offer them as services together.
Yeah, so I'd say to go back to the first point, probably about 75% of our business is physiotherapy. We have a sports medicine service as well. But in terms of our 20%, let's say, of our business is through strength and conditioning, and it is strength and conditioning. We have UKSCA qualified strength and conditioning coaches that work with us, and they work alongside our physios. And alongside being the important word there, there's huge synergy in terms of working alongside each other. It's exactly what would happen in an elite sport environment. So we transferred that straight across. All of our practices have gyms accessible to them, and so we, which I appreciate, is fortunate that we have that. But we have S&C coaches in all of our practices, and we work firstly with them, but also like using the same data sets. If you want to kind of go down the data route again, we use data to inform when we transition to strength and conditioning. We use data to strength and conditioning when we need to transition back to physio. We use data to inform when someone's ready to return to play. We use not only our own data, but we compare that against normative data for the population as well. So they are on the same boat in terms of how we actually apply and use data to make informed decisions. But in terms of like purely the soft side, the clinical side, like for me, it's a no-brainer. Those guys are very, very good at what they do. And particularly in our world, MSK sports injuries, they're invaluable to us.
And again, just to pick up two things there, challenges of multidisciplinary working, because again, I think that's something that we've all come across is people sometimes feeling either challenged or threatened by different professions. But ultimately, you seem to have created kind of a philosophy where, or a culture where those two professions are working well together. Do you find, again, if people have come from different clinical backgrounds and that's not the approach that they're used to being, I suppose that, and we've talked, I've talked before, I think we've talked about it, but I've talked with other people about that difference between autonomy and accountability within. So just because physio is classed as an autonomous profession doesn't mean that we're not accountable to either the organization that we work in or the clinical care and the team that we're working with. Are those challenges that you've noticed within the business, and how do you address those?
Yeah, definitely when people first start, there's always a little bit of particularly physios, to be honest, more than S&C coaches. There's a bit of angst, and maybe that's because we're primarily a physio clinic, but physios have a little bit of angst around S&C coaches and kind of treading on toes and where does the lines blur. But like that comes down to culture. Like our physios are super clear on what their role requirements are. They know where their limitations are. I'm a physio, so I can say this. I think strength and conditioning coaches' background and application of kind of particularly late stage rehab surpasses most physios anyway. So actually having S&C coaches with an expertise in that, and them knowing their role, the physios knowing their role, and then knowing where the kind of appropriate handover is, that's quite important. Because early on, what we'll start seeing when people first come to us is that physios will kind of hang on to people when they should be referred into S&C. S&C coaches tend to be a bit better at referring back into physio if they don't feel confident or something's not going right. But yeah, it has to be very clearly defined roles in terms of at what point do you transition into S&C, or when does S&C transition back into physio. And I do think that we're very fortunate. We've got a great culture where there's no real issues at all. We have a nice, maybe like if I'm being like slightly kind of confrontational, if you like, of some business models, I think one of the advantages are that we employ everyone. There's nothing to be gained or lost by any of our guys into referring, and that creates a lot of trust and a lot of kind of doing what's right for the patient rather than worrying about making sure that your mortgage is paid at the end of the month. So
Yeah, fair point.
that does help.
Yeah. And then the aspect that you said that you're fortunate to have gyms. Well, yeah, you're fortunate, but you could have stuck another treatment room there. So you've made a commercial business decision to give floor space and to give a fixed overhead cost to that gym. So you must be making a financial return on it.
Yeah, because again, like you track the data, you can see that it works. Commercially, patients, if they're using data, patients buy in better. That's fundamentally what we've seen. Patients will then carry out their treatment plans more, which is generally in private practice means they're coming back more. Everyone's happy. At the end, commercially it works out, but equally the patients are getting better outcomes. We're getting less recurrence rates. We measure that as well. We measure recurrence and concurrence rates. So we know that they're coming back less for the same problems if they undertake a strength and conditioning program. And so for us, it's fundamental. Like it underpins all of the work the physios do. For us, it's not about getting people out of pain. It's about making sure they don't come back with that problem. And actually having access to a gym and a proper gym with, proper weights and all the kind of stuff that you need, and the S&C coaches have everything they want. Those guys are able to do a really good job. And yeah, it's a big floor space. You're right. Like having a gym, you could stick a few treatment rooms in there and just go down physio route. But again, the kind of the patient data on that suggests that that would be a subpar offering if we can offer a gym instead.
And because you have now done the organic growth, where obviously you have then complete flexibility of how that fit out looks like, what that team looks like, there's obviously benefits to that, but that comes with a higher cost compared to when you go along the acquisition route. How do you start to then kind of marry the cost of change within your business? Or is it too early days on some of these acquisitions to see how that's going to cost you to actually change practices and change beliefs, maybe, or business models when you go along that acquisition route?
So good question. I think really we've got a pretty structured acquisition strategy when once we do come into a place. So a lot of the kind of, let's say, first 60 days are built into our strategy. So we know that for the first 60 days, we may not find everyone adopts what we want to do, or we might say there's a bit of resistance, or changing softwares, or managing by numbers, and kind of all of these changes that we start to implement. We do it softly because we know that physios naturally aren't, I appreciate I've got a kind of a tough talking gig on this one because not everyone necessarily agrees with how I do things, but I do think that generally speaking, we try to change things softly and gradually. So we build that kind of loss, if you like, into the acquisition cost. So by 60 days, normally we've kind of got everyone where we want them, and we often delay. So, we've done these two acquisitions in the last 2 months. You won't probably hear of that kind of from a branding marketing perspective until about 2 months after the acquisition's done, until we've got everything how we want it.
Yeah, fair point. And but you individually must be taking on some quite steep learning leadership
Yeah.
experience during this time as well.
Yeah, it's fun. I like it. It's not easy, I'm not gonna lie. And I think physio, again, if I had to be critical about profession, I think maybe at some point I'd love to see the degree program address the idea that, things like management and leadership and the world outside of the NHS should be addressed. I don't know if that, in my opinion, should change, but that's for a job much bigger than me. But I do think, yeah, it's interesting. This Goldman Sachs course I'm doing is actually pretty handy. I know you've done it, so you could probably speak as a alumni, but I think that will be some more formal ways of helping me address those problems. But the beauty about being a physio and running a business is that you've got both elements that you've got access to. So you have that human side. Not many physios get into physio if they're not human-centric. Like you generally can talk to people, you can have a conversation, you're empathetic. So you have that side of your leadership that's a natural strength anyway that people should lean into. To then marry that with good data analytics and learning a few tricks around kind of actually how to structure business plans. And like, I know it sounds such a cliche, but like actually getting a strong team of people around you that offer different skill sets. I sit in the middle really between this nice blend of commercial acumen and fully clinical acumen, and I kind of sit in the middle where I've got to make decisions on both, and that's, I think, a strength. I think I think if I was purely clinical and didn't have any business interest, I'd probably make poor business decisions. If I was purely commercial or financial background with no clinical background, I'd probably make pretty poor decisions for patients. So actually having that blend, I think, is probably a unique skill set that that we have. And I think physio should lean into that more, because generally speaking, like, you've got a lot of the traits what it takes to be a good leader as a person, and the business stuff you can learn.
I completely agree, and I've had this conversation with people where we talk about investment in MSK space, because I also think it's pretty unique how you're going on this journey through without external investment, from the point of view of retaining, and the same I did through a management buyer and the acquisition that I did. It's through retain profits within the business, and while that means that you don't have to, I suppose, account to someone else externally, but it's also it means you're managing your cash flow for a start point, which is a great thing for a business. But the point around that leadership and having, so if you're going from that external investment, that you've got different stakeholders that have suddenly got a say in the business. But I agree, from the point of view of healthcare professions, I think have got a fantastic ability to lead because we have that empathetic soft skill, which isn't easy to, it's easier to teach the technical kind
Yeah.
of skills to someone than it is to teach that ability to communicate and to have a high degree of emotional intelligence. So yeah, having clinicians at that in that senior leadership team, and I assume going forward now you're going to have a mix of both clinical and more from the kind of, I suppose, finance accountancy kind of background aspects around that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, even now we've got a finance director who's got a background in corporate finance, zero clinical background. That gives us a big boost in terms of a kind of a commercial decision-making acumen. But everyone else at that table has got a clinical background, so it's just easy balance. And so that just makes it easier.
And that aspect is then where I think that balancing that nuance between being a data-informed company and a data-led company. I literally, even last week, I was reading someone put a LinkedIn post about bringing the human element back and about data. And I'm like, why? They're not in competition with each other. Data can't make decisions on its own anyway. It's not alive kind of thing. So it requires a human to use that in an appropriate way. And that's why I think having clinicians at that leadership team and seeing that nuance between being data informed rather than, or the other side of being, I suppose, unethical or immoral and using data to make a bad decision, just because you can see that it's kind of backed up. But the bit that I suppose I'd like to really pick up briefly, because I think it is really important, is data is only as good as it's kind of collected, it's managed, it's communicated. We can make data show any picture that we want it to, really. How do you marry that kind of, I suppose, governance of it within your, because there will be certain things that you'll be looking to achieve, and therefore you can kind of direct it in one way, but how do you marry that objectivity within actual data when there's humans involved in it?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it is probably like one of the most important things to address when it comes to data. Firstly, having consistent data so you can compare against like for like. For example, if we do an acquisition, the very first integration task we do is to get everyone on the same practice management software, because that gives us immediate access to good data that we can compare site for site, physio to physio. And that allows us to see where there are holes, where there's not, where we need to retrain, and to kind of blend the two points we were just talking about just there. That is that data informed rather than data led, because that will give us the idea that, like an example I used earlier on, if it was data led, it'd be like, that person's not treating back pain as well as we should be. Like, let's do something about that. Kind of from a management perspective. If it's data informed, it's like, that person's there's an issue there with back pain. We've noticed that in the trends. Let's actually use that data to then address that by retraining or having a conversation around confidence or something there. So I think that is the human side of it, and that is important to address. But in terms of going back to the point about making sure the data is correct, we use primarily practice management software, but we have dashboards that we integrate with two or three different data collection tools that all pulls into dashboards that are accessible by our senior team, and we're pretty transparent with data, so that feeds down to most people in our organization who know what's going on from that side. And yeah, we've that's the bit that takes a bit of time, to making sure you've actually got the right data, the right input, you know what you're tracking. There are certain things, practice software to practice software. For example, we've done acquisition, they've gone from one to the other. The same wording might be actually, I know, let's say average transaction value, that might be a different value in one software to another based on how they record that data. So you do have to be very accurate about how you're recording it, because at the end of the day, if you're using data to make decisions around people or around processes or growth, you don't want to be making decisions on poor data. So that's
No.
like data 101, get that bit right.
And then the last point around data and around kind of, I suppose, MSK, there is a, I think you're, it's a pretty unique business to have such a data-informed approach. And I know that having spoken to kind of quite a lot of small SMEs, and I'm sure you find that having now spoken to a lot as well. Do you feel a responsibility to share that data wider from the point of view of conditions, clinical? Obviously, there's aspects that will be commercially sensitive and are very specific to your organization and how you run it. But what becomes the larger approach or that larger shift in people's thinking around data in MSK if it's all held internally and not used in a more public way?
No, it's a good question. I mean, from my side, the commercial stuff, yeah, there's some sensitivity around that you probably wouldn't go, throwing around everyone. But from definitely from a patient side, there's no reason why that data shouldn't be shared. Like, that should be widely accessible data. If there was a channel to share that better and easier, that would be good. If someone could create that, that'd be great. I also think, I won't signal out any insurance companies, but I would say that if they incentivized providing good data to prove good patient outcomes with certain practices, and that was rewarded commercially by increasing fees, I'd say that would be a better driver for a lot of physios to get better at recording data. At the moment, those companies asking people to record data and submit it in a difficult, time-consuming way that then costs the company money from time, but also they're getting paid at 50% of their private fee, for example. If that's the case, there's no incentive for people to provide that data. Why would they want to? If that was an easier, streamlined way to do it, that was rewarded if you could demonstrate good clinical outcomes, that would be a pretty good carrot for people to chase.
Yeah, I completely agree. Rhys, that's been insightful, and thank you for sharing your kind of thoughts on it. As I say, it's a topic that I find super interesting from the point of view because it's pretty unique. I don't think it's talked about enough, and it needs to be because every other industry and market takes a very data-informed approach. And the fact that we are evidence-based, evidence-informed, kind of sitting within that medical, it just makes sense to me. So yeah, thank you so much for your time, and good luck with the next stage of your journey.
Thank you very much. And I hope that was interesting, not too boring. Data can be a bit dry, but hopefully that was interesting.
Yeah, no, it was great. Thank you, Rhys. Well, that was the end of the second episode of Chewing Over High Performance. It's really insightful for me as a fellow business owner and also someone who's undertaken the Goldman Sachs program to talk to Rhys about his approach to data. As I said, I don't think it's an approach that is common. I don't think it's something that happens in a lot of conversations, but I do think it has its role. It allows us as practitioners, as business owners, as MSK professionals, to be able to have those conversations to the wider stakeholder group to inform our practice, both clinically as well as commercially, and understand the importance of data to being data informed rather than solely data led. I hope you enjoyed that episode, and next month I'll be joined by Dan Howes. Dan is a high performance coach, mentor, and lecturer. In Dan's episode, we're going to be specifically talking about the topic of leadership and learning in high performance environments. This is an area that I have a real interest in, as I believe it plays such a pivotal role in growth and development, both as us as individuals, but as well as organizations and the performance element in this perspective.